All right, guys, let's chat. Welcome back to Bible Chat. I'm your host, Caleb Sowers. And you know what? I have a lot of stuff going on, and I guess we can cover a little bit of it before we dive into the episode. Kind of clue you guys in. I know it's been a while since I've put up a recording, and as always, it seems like every episode anymore, I seem to be apologizing for it. But let me just say, this was a much-needed break. There were several things that happened between the recording of the Q&A episode and this one, and I'm not going to get into all of it, but let's just cover a few things. First, I finally was able to wrap up classes for the summer and honestly just needed a mental health break between some of the things that were going on in my personal life with all kinds of emergencies and things like that, school, work, this whole coronavirus thing, and the amount of overtime that I was doing at work because of while everybody else was home during the shutdown, my hours actually picked up. During that period of time, I actually switched jobs. I'm now working for a different company, and now I'm back in classes, and things have mostly mellowed out, and so all of that was going on. Over the summer, I was able to renew my district license in the Church of the Nazarene, and although I can't divulge all of the details at this point in time, I did want to let you guys know that there may be a ministry opportunity coming up for me, which is so exciting, because when you're going to school and you're longing to serve in the church, and you just keep running into closed doors, it can get pretty discouraging. But I've met up with a good group of pastors here locally, and there might be something on the close horizon for me to finally get involved. And that's just exciting. But that's me. I hope everything's been going well for you guys. I hope you're all staying safe. I hope that this whole coronavirus pandemic and all the unrest that's sweeping through America right now, just I hope you guys are all staying safe. I hope you're still looking to the Lord, and I hope that that He's kept His hand on you. With that, why don't we go ahead and you know what? I have some exciting news. I do plan on getting regular in releasing episodes and things like that here again. And so I wanted to announce that due to some of the things I was dealing with during the coronavirus pandemic and all that time off of recording, I have found myself digging into several different topics as far as other religions and cults, trying to help a friend out who's in a tough spot right now. And with all that information, I felt led to go ahead and pass that along and share that with you guys. So following this episode, I'm starting a series that I am going to entitle Confronting the Cults. There are a lot of podcasts and a lot of books out there that deal with the different religions and cults that are present in our world. And some things we may not consider cults, but I hope to dive into the subjects and reveal them for what they are, and help you guys to deal with the heresy and the talking points that will be presented to you should you ever run into any of these people, and how you can answer them biblically, historically, you know, and factually, to protect yourselves from some of the things that are out there. And so our first episode of the series, Confronting the Cult, will cover the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or as they are more commonly referred to as, the Mormons. And so I hope that you guys will join us for those. Please, when they start to drop, you know, I'm trying not to be too pushy, but when they start to drop, I pray that you guys will share those things, pass that info along, and follow along with them to protect yourselves, to protect your friends, to protect your loved ones from the heresy that is presented in churches like the Mormon Church. So, that's everything that should be worth mentioning right now. So let's get on with the episode. So the title of this episode, For Such a Time as This, and if you guys are familiar with your Bible, you might be able to guess that this will be coming out of the book of Esther. So as always, I hope you're following along in your Bible, and if you are, and I hope you are, turn to the book of Esther, Chapter 4, verse 14. 4. If you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. So, this verse may seem a little out of place if you don't have the proper context around it of what was going on in the story and who these people were, who's saying what to who, and all that stuff. So just real quickly, I want to take the time to go through and just explain the story of Esther up to this point. So the first chapter, honestly, is just the king of Persia, Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes, depending on your translation, throws this gigantic party and gets everybody drunk, and he gets drunk and decides that he should show off just how awesome he is and look at my hot trophy wife, pretty much. And so he asks his wife, the queen at the time, Ashti, to come out and parade in front of all of his guests. And obviously, you know, which is no fault of her own, she refuses to do so. But you don't really just say no to the king of Persia. So he doesn't execute her or anything, but he has her crown taken away. She's no longer his queen. Well, he sobers up the next day or so and realizes how stupid that was, and now he doesn't have a queen. So his advisors gather around and they're like, hey, you know what? We're going to have all the most beautiful women in your realm come together, and we're going to have kind of like a beauty pageant, and whoever wins the pageant, you know, gets to be your queen. And, Mordecai, who is one of the main characters of the story, has a cousin who he knows is really beautiful, and he convinces her to go ahead and sign up for this beauty pageant, and lo and behold, you know, we won't go into all of it, she wins. Her name is Esther, by the way, I guess I should probably mention that. And she wins, and she marries the king, and now she is Queen Esther. Well, there's another little guy in the story. His name is Haman. So far, if you're keeping track, the characters are King Xerxes or Ahasuerus, which I prefer. It's just not as fun to say when you're trying to say all the names in a list. Anyway, King Xerxes, Mordecai, Queen Esther, and now Haman. And Haman in this story would kind of be the bad guy. Haman is second in all of Persia to King Xerxes. and he knows it. He gets this promotion. He thinks he's a big deal. He's so proud of himself. So he goes out in front of the palace, and everybody that's gathered in front of the palace bows down, except for Mordecai. Mordecai refuses to bow. Well, Haman doesn't like this. And so Haman decides right then and there, that's it. I'm done with this dude. This dude will not bow. This guy doesn't know how to show respect. I don't like this dude. And you know what? I don't like him so much. I'm not just going to wipe him out and have him killed. I'm going to kill everybody that's like him. And so the next thing you know in the story, there's a decree, because Haman tricks the king into signing a decree that all the Jews in the land are going to be wiped out. He decides, because he's not getting the respect that he wants, that genocide is okay. Well, this scares Mordecai. Mordecai goes to Esther and he says to Esther, hey, you got to do something about this. You're the queen. Go talk to the king. Well, there are rules in Persia about who's allowed to talk to the king and when, and how that all goes about. And even the queen doesn't have unfiltered access to the king. And so she tells him, look, you don't understand. I can't. And that gets to this passage here. For if you remain silent, in other words, if you don't do anything about this, you know what? God's going to preserve his people, but it'll come from somewhere else. And you're not above what's going to happen to us. So you need to consider things, because you have your position for such a time as this. Now I'm reading this. See, I had the Book of Esther on my mind for a long time. Pretty much through this entire coronavirus thing, I've been thinking about the Book of Esther. Through the whole racial unrest, through everything that's been going on, honestly, the Book of Esther has been on my mind nonstop. I studied it with my Bible study group that meets every Saturday. I've been talking about it in school. I've been mentioning it in Sunday school classes. I've been talking nonstop about it to my wife. She's probably sick of hearing the name Esther. It has been on my mind, and it has related to everything lately. But to kind of give you guys a glimpse of why don't we take the time to look at what sort of a time that Esther and Mordecai lived in. Well, let's consider. Their society was in a complete disarray. At this same time, the walls of Jerusalem were completely fallen. The city was open and barren and destroyed. See, Nehemiah had rebuilt some of the walls, but all the Jews had still not returned to the city. Their view of God at this point in time had changed. See, the temple had been rebuilt by the efforts of Ezra and the others, but you got to remember, if you read the Book of Ezra and the Book of Nehemiah, the people had forgotten how to worship God. They literally didn't know how to go about having a service in the temple. The priests' children didn't even know how to speak Hebrew, so they had lost their cultural identity. If you read through the Book of Esther, chapter 3, verses 8 and 9, kind of give you an idea that there is a racial unrest in the kingdom of Persia. verses 8 and 9 of chapter 3 say, "Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, 'There is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdoms. Their laws are different from those of all other people, and they do not observe the king's laws, so it is not in the king's interest to let them remain. If it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who carry on the king's business to put the king's to put into the king's treasuries.'" So they act different. Their culture is different. They don't fit in. See, their time that they're living in isn't really so different from ours. Not at all. See, we live in a time that our society is in a complete disarray. You turn on the news, you see riots, you see looting, you see people burning businesses down. You hear the politicians attacking each other. I mean, it's different even from a normal election cycle. I'm sure all of you can agree with me. I mean, the political polarization of our day is so extreme. You have people who are Democrats who say that they can't see how a Christian could be a Republican because there's no compassion, there's no empathy. How can you condemn everybody who needs a leg up all the time? On the other end, you have Republicans who will say, "I don't know how a Christian could be a Democrat. How the Bible teaches against giving these handouts. The Bible teaches against accepting everybody the way that they want. God has expectations on people." And they condemn and they condemn and they condemn. People's political identity overrides their identity in Christ. And that's just in the church. But all of our society is like that. The political polarization, there's no talking, there's no meeting in the middle. You're either a Republican or a Democrat. It's funny, if you comment on something online and you in any way contradict somebody on one side or the other of the political aisle, everybody just assumes that you must be the opposite. Instead of seeing that sometimes it's okay to disagree with someone, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're an opponent. But that's it. You either agree or you're an opponent. I mean, our view of God has changed as well, just like the Jews in the book of Esther, who have forgotten the expectations that God has for them, who have forgotten how to worship God. See, we have started to make God fit our preferences. We start making our political identity and our Christian identity fit together. And honestly, that doesn't work whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or whatever. God takes precedence. Christ takes precedence. But instead, we try to make God fit into whatever mold that we've placed ourselves in. We try to make Christianity politically correct, and it's not. God's expectations, no matter what those may be, don't ever change. We're supposed to be a peculiar people, so we'll always stand out, no matter what side of the aisle you're walking on. Instead, what we do is either try to make him fit our preferences, or we erase him. Look at how erased God is in our society. You can't say God in the Pledge of Allegiance. You can't have "In God We Trust" on the money. We can't have prayer in school. We can't make religious stances on a major stage. All of that is weird. I'm not in any way just sitting here condemning either political party, because that's honestly your business, not mine, but there's a major political party that decided that God is going to be completely erased from their platform. And then we wonder what is wrong. We have major churches splitting because we want to make God conform rather than conforming to God. The Episcopalians, the Anglican Church, American Anglican Church, the United Methodist Church, the Lutheran Church has split and split and split and split because one wing wants to conform God to their preference and the other wants to stay conformed to God. We've forgotten how to worship God. And it doesn't take much of a stretch for us to see the racial unrest in our country right now. And again, I'm not making a statement. I'm not saying one thing or another, but we should all be able to agree that the problems that we're facing on the racial front in this country come from the lack of ability to communicate, to hear either side. We have our minds made up, and that we want to live in an echo chamber. And so we don't listen to each other. We have the answer. But the problem is, no one's looking that way. And so in the book of Esther, we see the same thing. See, the one peculiar thing about the book of Esther, if you read it, study it, learn about it in any way, is that you will notice that God is not directly mentioned even once in the entire book. Esther and Mordecai, you will not see them bow the knee and pray. Esther and Mordecai, actually, if you pay attention to them, you'll see that they create their own problems. And throughout the entire story, all the problems that they face that come to a head in chapter 3 and then into chapter 4 are problems that they created themselves. You can tell that they don't know what they're doing anymore when it comes to being obedient to God, because Esther's marriage alone is something that God would have forbidden, because he was not someone who was okay. God is not someone who is okay with you marrying somebody who isn't one of his people. And Esther intermarries with a Persian, and not just any Persian, but the king of Persia, who is an idolater. But she marries him. But what happens in the book of Esther is things work out. Spoiler alert. Things work out. There's a lot of controversy around the book of Esther. Actually, if you study it again, like I said, you'll find out that John Calvin and Martin Luther wanted to remove it from the canon because God is not mentioned. And they couldn't see the theology of the book of Esther. But there's a big doctrine that is present through the entire book, and it may be the best example of that doctrine in the Bible. The doctrine of providence. Providence. It's become an unfamiliar term. Providence simply means that God can use hard or even bad times and willing people to do something good. Again, God can use hard times or even bad times, and a person who is willing to be obedient to accomplish something good. That shouldn't be hard to understand if you're a Christian. We look at the story of Joseph and everything that Joseph goes through. And what's his famous quote? Everything you intended for evil, God meant for good. And that's the whole idea of providence. It often looks like coincidence. If we are taking God out of the equation, providence looks like coincidence. Albert Einstein actually said, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. See, God does not necessarily cause the events that we face, those hard times. For example, the coronavirus. The coronavirus, despite some things you may see online, is not this great judgment or punishment sent by God upon the face of the earth. But he can use it for a greater purpose if his people are obedient and faithful. See, Esther and Mordecai had caused most of their issues. Esther should never have been married to a Persian. God demanded a pure people. Mordecai never gave a reason for not bowing to Haman. In fact, if you go back and you read the beginning of the story, Haman or Mordecai is asked again and again and again, why won't you bow? Why won't you bow? Why won't you bow? And it says that he wouldn't give an answer. And finally, he gives one answer, one sentence, and he doesn't actually explain it. You know what he says? Mordecai says, because I'm a Jew. Well, that doesn't explain anything. Why won't he show respect to Haman's office? It's not that he's bending to an idol. It was simply a sign of respect, but Mordecai wouldn't show it. He says, because I'm a Jew. That's it. But here's the interesting thing. Remember, I said that providence often looks like coincidence. But the issue that's between Haman and Mordecai goes all the way back to the book of Exodus. And then from the book of Exodus to the book of 1 Samuel. See, in the book of Exodus, when the Jews leave Egypt, there's a group of people who block the way. The Edomites or the Amalekites. You can call them either one, they're the same. They fight against the Jews as they're trying to exit Egypt, and they cross the Red Sea. They enter into the wilderness, and the Amalekites were people who were nomads that wandered around in the desert. And God, in that instance, swore vengeance against those people. And so then along in 1 Samuel, one of the trials of King Saul is to go and kill all of the Amalekites, to push them out of Canaan and take the kingdom and form it. And King Saul goes and fights against the Amalekites, but he doesn't kill them all. He preserves King Agag. And then you get into, and Agag eventually gets killed, but you can take the, you can guess that even though King Saul says that he kills all the Amalekites, that it's not true, because then you get into the book of Esther. And you meet a character named Haman. And when they introduce Haman, they say, Haman the Agagite. In other words, the descendant of Agag. So the Amalekites are still around. And what's interesting also is that Mordecai is a Benjamite. Well, King Saul was a Benjamite as well. So we are generations removed from the battle between Agag and King Saul, and their descendants are now butting heads, Haman and Mordecai. Again, it looks like coincidence, but God is using circumstances to his advantage. See, I'm not a person who believes that God is a puppet master and he's moving all the pieces on the board however he wants to. But what I do believe is that God gives us free will, but he will, just like Mordecai says in our text, chapter 4, verse 14, he will use somebody to accomplish his goals. And it's your choice whether that will be you or someone else. See, King Saul was supposed to bring vengeance upon the Amalekites, but he failed. And so now it is laying at the feet of Mordecai to accomplish this. So even though Mordecai and Esther make this big mess that threatens all of the Jews with genocide, they have a choice. And when it mattered, they were obedient. See, the big story, the big point of Esther beyond just the story of providence is that we serve a God of redemption. So even though we have made this big mess in the country, we can either be a voice calling people back to God, or we can be adding to the noise. We can be a spirit of calm. We can be pillars of faith. We can give this country the answer to coronavirus, the answer to the polarization, the answer to social unrest, racial unrest in this country, or we can cause the problem, cause more of the problem, but it's going to be one or the other. It can't be both. It can't be both. We're either going to point to God or we're going to point to chaos. But it can't be both. See, Esther and Mordecai had every reason to be terrified. They had every reason to be worried. They had every reason to be sick and to hide and run away and all of that. But instead, what they did is they did what was right. They did what was right. And you'll see in the end that God uses their obedience, Esther's bravery to enter the presence of the king and to unveil everything, or Mordecai's bravery to face down his enemy, to keep his mouth quiet when it mattered as well. Instead of running his mouth, instead of attacking, instead of accusing, instead of doing everything, he went to the one person who he knew could help him, and then he left it in her hands. And then Esther brings it home, and God gets his vengeance, and his people are preserved, and they go on. And we're at that point in our country where the people of God are either going to be obedient and they're going to call out to him and they're going to point people in the right direction and they're going to give wise counsel and we're going to lay forth the answer to all the problems. See, there's no answer in a political party. It doesn't matter what your personal beliefs are. It doesn't matter if you're voting for Donald Trump or Joe Biden or whoever, it doesn't matter. That politician is not going to save this country. That politician, no matter how good or bad they may be, will not have the answers to all the problems. They're not going to fix the race issue. They're not going to fix the political polarization. If anything, it'll get worse. The only answer is in Jesus Christ. In Jesus Christ, we are all one people. In Jesus Christ, those separations politically, racially fade away. But it's only when we realize that that answer is in him. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those that love God and are called according to his purpose." What is his purpose? His purpose is to bring people to salvation and to grow up in the body of Christ. And the only way that we do that is by sharing the gospel and pointing to God, pointing to Jesus Christ and his salvation that he offers right now. Hands stretched out, come to me, lay your sin here, be born again. And I've got this. So what are we going to do? Are we going to lay it all on the altar and walk away from it? Or are we going to continue to add to the noise and the strife? Are we going to be servants of God's providence? Or are we going to keep trying to fix things ourselves? Because how well has that worked out for us? God's purpose always remains the same, the salvation of souls. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. I hope that it's a welcome back episode to everybody. If you want to get a hold of me, I would love to hear from you guys. I've been chit-chatting with you guys even with my time off, but you can get a hold of me on the Bible Chat Facebook page and shoot me a message on there or look at some of our posts that I've been dropping. You can also email me at BibleChatPodcast84@gmail.com, or you can get a hold of me on Patreon and just search for Bible Chat and you'll find me on there. Very soon, I hope to be dropping the new episode and a new series of Confronting the Cults. Keep an eye out for that. And any questions, any ideas for the show, anything like that, feel free to reach out in any of those three arenas, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from you guys. But until next time, this has been an episode of Bible Chat with your host, Caleb Sowers, and I thank you guys all for listening, and God bless you all. Thank you.